Hello and welcome to The Improverbial, a podcast where we unearth obscure sayings and phrases from around the world, invent absurd new proverbs, and talk about things mundane, spurious, irrelevant, and profound. I am the Capitalist, Pete Kirkwood.
And I'm Lisa Thauvet, the Tilt Thinker. I've been doing and coaching improv for many years. Pete and I have been doing improv together for some of those years. This podcast is a mashup of Pete's interest in the science of well-being, my background in education and human development, our shared fascination with the world's idiomatic weirdness, and our superpowers in improv comedy. We are the Improverbializers.
Woohoo!
Yeah! Pete, is the coast clear?
I don't know, Lisa. You tell me.
Let me check. Oh, it does look like the coast is clear. Let's get started.
Let's go do something naughty.
Okay. Pete, that is our proverb for today.
Nice intro. I like it.
Yeah. Hey, the coast is clear. You know, I said this the other day and I was like, oh, I love that proverb for many reasons. Because for me, it brings about like this images of like spies and most like to my heart, like playing hide and seek as a kid, you know, like is the coast clear? Can we go?
Yep.
So I thought, let's do that for this episode. And it does conjure all those things. And it actually, the meaning, if you haven't heard this before, is there's no visible danger. It's safe to go. It's free of someone who might catch you doing something. And so it's really an interesting etymology on this one as well.
Plus useful.
Oh, it's useful.
Yeah.
I mean, I obviously just used it recently. I cannot remember what it's for, why I was sneaking around.
Yeah.
But I obviously wanted to sneak around because I said the coast is clear.
It does have fun connotations.
But it's been around for several hundred years.
Several.
Actually from the 1500s is what I saw.
Mm-hmm.
I saw it credited in Spanish. There's a saying, no hay moros en la costa.
En la costa, sí. Yeah.
En la costa. Which means there are no Moors along the coast. So looking at some Spanish history, the Moors are the Middle Ages Muslims of Northern Africa. And they had overrun Spain. And of course, there would be dangers on landing on the coast if there were Moors that were there. So,
well, assuming you were hostile to the Moors and they were,
there was some hostility, I believe, definitely. During that time.
That Moorish habitation of the Iberian Peninsula ran from, I think, 700 to like the 1500s and 1600s.
Oh my gosh.
So it's hard to say how early that Spanish version of this proverb is. But we know that in other European languages by the 1500s or the 1600s or by the 15th century, I think I found some references the word coast, right, comes from the Latin costa. Costa refers to the rib or flank or the side of normally an animal, but also potentially a person, the part that is protected by your ribs. And so that, I just thought this was interesting because we have two senses of coast. One is like the edge of the land, and one is like to roll down a hill or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was interested in that. And I found out that so in French, this costa, this Latin root, became côte, C-O-T-E with a circumflex over the O. Like if you've seen like Côte du Rhône or some kind of wine.
Côte d'Ivoire.
Yeah. Côte d'Ivoire. Yeah.
The Ivory Coast.
Yeah, exactly. No, that côte would be the coast, the kind like next to the land. But I'm talking about Côte du Rhône, like the sides of the hills of the Rhône Valley is where this wine comes from, right? So the side of a hill in French is côte. And so you have this, and the sense of coasting down a hill came from that sense of the word côte, which has a common root. And in English is the same exact word, right? To coast. But in English, the original sense of the word coast came from was like a sailing term, but it was about sailing near the coast, like coast as a verb. So we use coast as a verb when you're coasting your bike down a hill without pedaling, but they would say, oh, I'm coasting along Cornwall, meaning I'm going along the coast of Cornwall. So anyway, it all comes back to the coast being clear though. And it either would mean, like, as you said, it's safe to land because there's no hostile, you know, folks on the beach, but also can mean it's safe to embark because there's no hostile ships in, you know, off the coast. So the, use both
in, ways. In either way. Yeah. land or in by sea. You know, I talked about how this reminds me of childhood and hide and seek. I mean, is the when the coast is clear, you can come out, mm-hmm. right? So I started looking at hide and seek and its origins or what that's nice. All
yeah.
about.
Yeah.
And they say that almost every culture has some version of hide and seek.
Right. It's one of those games you can play with
no language,
equipment,
no equipment anytime. And you know, one resource I was looking at talked about how it is a great example of an oral tradition. Like this isn't something you get out the rule book and you sit around like mm-hmm. I learned it mm-hmm. from the older kids in my neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And we were playing the same game that I'm sure my parents played and their parents mm-hmm. played. And,
what are the rules of hide and seek?
So there are several different ones. One version is everybody hides and the person who's it goes and finds them. And when you're found, the first person who's found has lost and will be the next person who's it. And the last person who's found is the winner. The other, another common way is, you hide. And then when the person leaves the base where they did their counting, then you try to touch base uh-huh. while that person's away looking for others. Yes. And there's lots of others. There's sardines. There's lots of different type of hide and seeks out there.
Yeah. And it's like, it's an oral tradition. So no one like it's, I mean, I suppose there's probably somebody tried to write a book of the rules for hide and seek, but I don't think it would be a bestseller.
It wouldn't be a bestseller. Mm-mm. Now, something I did find was that there is a hide and seek world championship.
Get out of here.
There is. And it's played by adults. It's in
tiny adults.
They're regular right. size.
The winners
I
are
think.
Tiny.
I think they're just regular size, but they're really sneaky and able to hide in small places.
That's what I mean. Like if you're a gigantic person, forget about it.
I don't know.
You're totally lose.
I think it is the version where you're running to go back to base. That is the version.
That's like the pro version. Because I was thinking there's not that many sports in which it's an advantage to be tiny. And I was hoping
you
for one.
Hoping this
I couldn't
was
make,
one
I was thinking
them.
I might compete.
Well, maybe you can. It's in Italy. Ooh. It's called Nas Candino World Championship. it takes place on 25,000 square meters. There's 70 teams, 320 players.
That's big.
It's a big competition. They tried to get this competition of hide and seek into the Tokyo Games. It did not make it. Surprisingly,
I'm a gold medalist. Where the hell are you?
Yeah, exactly. We still can't find the gold medalist. We'd want to give it to you. Come
we
out.
We just even know that the game is over.
Yeah. And you know what they do?
Come out wherever you are.
Is the coast clear? So Pete, the winner of this wins the Golden Fig Leaf Award.
That's funny.
Do you know why it's the golden
yeah,
fig?
Yeah, right? Because
I
figs are
would.
Used for hiding things.
That's it. It's a symbol of
that
hiding.
Is genius.
From
only the
Adam
Italians.
And Eve.
I swear,
yeah.
only the Italians would think of that. So you're right. Like the coast is clear makes me think of all kinds of exhilarating youthful shenanigans. You know, like even coming out of hiding during capture the flag or like creeping out of the dormitory after my curfew at the repressive boarding school I attended in England. All those good.
I had similar ideas and I was starting to look at ways to sneak around. Like what are the advice for sneaking?
Oh yeah. Tell me.
So here's the first piece of advice. So next time you are in a repressive boarding school, Pete, mm-hmm. or just trying to get out of your house, yeah. you know, because you just need to get out. You don't want your family
to
wake up.
Nobody notice.
Nobody notice. So you want to walk next to a wall where the floor is less likely to squeak, right? You know, not in the middle of the, where the creaks are. Okay. It's close to the floor. That's where it's most
secure.
What are
you saying about my house?
Not your house in particular. Okay. This is in general. You want to... And when you are
Do not let my kids hear this episode, okay?
Okay, this is censored. All parents, do not allow your children to see this.
Hold on, fuck.
Great.
Now kids can't listen to this.
Oh, great, Pete. So also, if you're going down the stairs, you got uh-huh. some stairs, but...
Squeaky ones too.
If you go down backwards, you're less likely to have them squeak. It may not squeak, but have noise. Going down backwards is quieter.
But you'll fall down the stairs, right? And then it'll be like clankety clunk and then everyone will wake up.
The other trick, though, is to hold on to both railings and lift your weight off of your, release
These
the weight.
These are great tips.
I know. This will help be very, very quiet.
Dad, why are you going down the stairs backwards?
How did you hear me? Shoot. Lisa, this doesn't work.
Call me. Sorry, no, go ahead.
So then another thing, because I know this will come in handy, Pete. Uh-huh. So you want to breathe really quietly. And they recommend you breathe out of your nose, first of all. But if you have to breathe out of your mouth, open your mouth really wide. So Pete, watch. Let's do an experiment.
The image is funnier and funnier of me trying to get out of my house at night.
So Pete, here's me breathing out of my mouth. But here's me breathing out of my mouth really wide.
I wish you could see Lisa right now.
We'll see how that sounds for our viewers. Anyway, it is also more quiet. Yeah. If the more the more width you give to your passage, your airflow, the bigger hole.
Yeah. What do they call it?
Opening? Expanse?
With weapons, it's a bigger caliber.
The bigger caliber you can make your mouth. I suppose it works for your nostrils too. You just get them
you have
flared.
To hold your nostrils open. Wait.
So yes, for you, Pete, as well as for our listeners, I hope you're able to sneak around
this
a little bit
so
easier.
Educational. But I just wanted to bring one big thought into this thing, right? And this is, it all plays into this. Like we're parents and to a certain extent, we feel like our job is to prevent our kids making bad choices, right? But as a person, like a lot of my best stories come from bad choices that I've made or like questionable choices that I made. Maybe something that I did after someone told me that the coast was clear. So the question I want to put to you is like, how do you balance that? You know, the like part of the thrill of when you're young of being naughty is the transgression. If your parents are like, yeah, you can go out anytime you want, night or day with whoever you want. There's something that's like not quite as fun about that. I don't want to make rules that are designed for my kids to break them though either, right? So does that mean I have to like make a rule knowing it's going to be broken and be cool with that? Because that seems hypocritical.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, like this fine balance of rules and rules that can be enforced, like few rules, but enforce those rules. I mean, that's one way to go.
But it seems like one rule that like should be like important is like, don't sneak out of the house at night. Given them all these tricks.
I know.
For
well,
one.
No one, no child is listening to this, right?
You right. Because
sure
I already
that.
Said, I said swear word. So I struggled. So help me out, listeners. Do I, make a rule knowing it's going to be broken? Do I not make a rule? Do I make a rule and enforce it and not let my kids do naughty things like I did? What do I do?
I know. And as you said, some of that thrill is just that there is a rule about to be broken. I mean, maybe the theory is just make a whole bunch of rules that you don't care that they're going to break and then they can feel rebellious without getting any harm.
Maybe done. We could have rules that are like class A rules, class, you know, like different levels of rules.
But just you and your wife know those classes, right? Because no, then
they have to know.
Yeah.
Because otherwise they'll be like, oh, remember he said we couldn't do this and we did it. It was fine. That means we can also smoke and drink and drive cars.
Even though I'm only 12 or 13.
Dad said we couldn't, but it's okay.
I don't know, Pete. You know what? It's an experiment. Raising children is an experiment.
I'm putting
good luck.
One of them comply and the other one I'll let.
Oh, yeah. Do different for each
It'll
child.
It'll be A-B testing.
Yeah. That's good.
Use me A-B testing on my children. I don't know. Help us out, listeners, please.
We're eager to hear, please.
Yeah. All right. Hey, everybody. The coast is clear for us to start part two of this episode. As a reminder, the second part of our podcast is entirely fabricated. So don't go around thinking that anything that we say from here on out is even remotely true. It's entirely made up. Remember, it's fake. Okay, it's improv. Here we go. I am going to turn to the Proverbitron, which we have actually tried to engage a silent mode using all the tips that Lisa talked about in the first half of this episode. But it was like, super boring. So this is a good old Proverbitron, just rocking it out and I'm going to hit the button.
We took off its wool slippers to make it quiet.
Yeah. All the bells and jingles.
Yeah. We took all those off and we're like, aw, it's
boring.
Just boring.
Also, it's a podcast.
Yeah. We want some noise. Yeah. Let's make some noise.
There we go. Okay. Ready? I'm going to press this button right now.
Crumbs.
The first word is crumbs.
Lisa, could you turn on the Proverbitron for me? So
yeah,
I can
here.
Get
I'm just going to go over here. I got that lever. There we go.
Simpleton.
The second word is simpleton. Simpleton.
So Pete, this proverb is a little bit dangerous. When the crumbs are in the cracks, the simpletons eat the shark.
When crumbs are in the cracks, the simpletons eat the shark.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, this is inscrutable.
Absolutely.
This is one of those ones that you're like, what?
Oh, I know.
I hear this from time to time and I'm like, what the hell does that mean?
I know. And right? But I pretend like I know what it means. And right. Until I did all the research. Right. So now all those who are just like Pete and I, at that dinner right. party and like, ha, 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 coming off with your laugh.
Yeah.
We're going to unravel this absolutely. For you right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, let's start with the sharks, because the sharks, as we know, they've declined in their numbers, but it used to be there were sharks everywhere. There were sharks in freshwater. There were sharks in ponds. There were sharks in swamps.
And it was a problem because the sharks right. were everywhere.
Right.
And people were losing limbs and yeah. The peasants who would try to muck out the mill pond.
Exactly. The rice paddies, it was terrible. All over the world. There were sharks. They were plentiful. And so first, that's a little piece of history that mm-hmm. is little known. Because of the decimation, the sharks are only now in basically big bodies of water in the ocean, in the deep.
But back in the day when they were so plentiful, it was like, they were so, all you'd have to do was dig a little hole in the side of the water body and the sharks would swim right into it voraciously. And then if you just put some mud behind them, they would be stuck. So yeah. Anybody could catch a shark.
You could catch a shark, but if you lived mm-hmm. once you caught right. it, that was always the risk.
Exactly.
Right. Exactly. Now sharks, though, of course, were delicious, continue to be delicious. I just had shark this morning.
Mm-hmm. And dried. I like it dried and shredded. If you mm-hmm. dry and shred it.
If you, yeah, you put it through a grater.
Honey mustard.
A little bit of honey mustard. Delicious. Mm. I like to put the sriracha sauce on it and a little bit of crumpled cocoa puffs. Like that
really?
Sweet,
I've never tried that.
Spicy and sharp.
I like a little citrus on top.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's nice. It brings out the tang, the shark tang. So delicious.
Delicious.
So the sharks now, the simpletons. And that term is not used that often now, but back then a simpleton was very much associated with sharks, right? Because the people of the villages said, "Ooh, I want my yummy shark," would try to catch these sharks. Obviously they would come back with less than the fingers they started with.
Mm-hmm. And because it was so easy to entrap the shark that even a simpleton could do it. But of course you'd have to be a little bit touched in the head, as it were, to be into that as your trade, as your way of making living.
But so every village had
a simpleton, a shark simpleton.
A yeah. shark simpleton. Yeah. It's true. Mm-hmm. Now there was one named Joseph M. Marauder. Joseph mm-hmm. M. Marauder. Did your research show what the M stood for? I couldn't find that.
Milfoil, I think.
Was it milfoil?
Yeah, I know. It was I'm not sure why that's relevant, but I did find that, is that important?
Well, I was underneath the M was for. M.
It always appears in his name. It's always there. Yeah,
there's always it's like Samuel L. Jackson.
Right.
It's yeah. like Joseph M. Marauder was yeah, always.
John F. Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Peter S. Kirkwood.
I was just thinking of it.
Lisa
E.
Q.
Oh. Q thought for queen. Queen. So Joseph yes. M. Marauder, he was the simpleton of the Norwich folk son town of.
Norwich folk son of Southern England, Sussex, I think.
Sussex it was. And he could catch sharks, but every mm-hmm. time he'd go out, he would be missing something else. Right. Yeah. So it started out with one finger, two fingers, as you can imagine, 10 fingers, no more.
Uh-huh.
Then it was,
he started, his toes too. And then all that was left was the little gaps between his toes. Like the sharks mm-hmm. got all the knuckles off the fronts of his toes.
And although he could still walk mm-hmm. and he could get around the village and sneak around the village quite well.
Get around Norwich, Folkestone.
Sneaking around, mm-hmm. Sneak up on the sharks as well. Mm-hmm.
He was good at that. He used to walk with his mouth wide open, they say.
Yep, mouth wide open because it's acquired away.
Backwards. I don't know. I guess, yeah. He knew that. He used to walk backwards downstairs.
So what he found out was if you sneak up on a shark, you're less likely to be attacked by the shark.
Right.
It took him, 20 times to come to that conclusion? But
some stories say 19. Some stories say he still had the thumb on his left hand.
I did not see that mm-hmm. piece of research.
Yeah, yeah, I heard that they call that Marauder's Thumb.
That's where you get Marauder's Thumb mm-hmm. from? Wow.
Yeah.
And so like the hitchhikers used to be called the Marauder's Thumb.
Right. Yeah.
And I never knew
Marauders
that.
Of the highway. Yeah. Yeah,
the Marauder yeah. of the highway.
Well, so anyway, then when the Great Famine of 1792 hit that part of Sussex, there was really not very much food left. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And at that time the food was so scarce
yeah.
that even the wealthy were like scouring their pantries, and they yeah. were scouring, what they would say is they were scouring the cracks for crumbs.
Yeah. That's what they were doing. I mean, anything that they could find.
Right.
Yeah.
So they were like, what are we going to eat? We're with their, you know, the crumbs are in the cracks and mm-hmm. we're all starving here.
Right.
But you know who was eating well?
The simpleton, Joseph M. Marauder. That's right.
And all the other simpletons.
They were the best fed people in the village. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, like the town fool, the person that everybody mm-hmm. said, oh, look at No Fingers Joseph or whatever the simpleton's yeah. name was. Right.
Look at, he's getting fat. He's eating shredded dried shark's fin on, you know, with honey and
yep.
sriracha.
Cocoa puff shark.
Mm-hmm. A little citrus. And the rest of them are just eating the crumbs out of the cracks. And so, you know, this is that expression that you say when like the tables have turned and, you know, the one fingered
yeah.
simpleton
yeah.
is suddenly the only guy in town who's got any food.
You say, hey, when crumbs are in the cracks, the simpleton eats the sharks. It's a little bit of a nanny nanny poo poo.
Yeah. And now you know. Now you know. That's how it goes.